Welcome, everybody, to Capes and Scowls West. This is our July 26th reviews issue. Excuse me. I'm one of your hosts, Pat, and with me is...
Nat.
Ken Hatt.
Yay. So we will later be reviewing House of X, number one, but first we have Batman Curse of the White Knight, book one, written and illustrated by Sean Murphy with colors by Matt Hollingsworth.
Ooh.
So this is the sequel to the previous acclaimed Batman White Knight. And just a quick rundown, we have the cold open in 1648. 1685, excuse me.
Almost and, dyslexic moment.
Yes, and we have a battle between ostensibly with Lord Wayne and Colonel Lafayette, a.k.a. Laffy, which is essentially Batman and Joker dueling it out over the centuries.
Yeah.
And then cut to current times with the Joker escaping from prison, Batman questioning his... legitimacy as a superhero.
I thought at the end he did reveal himself, or did he just do it to...
Revealed it to Gordon.
Okay.
Oh, yes. And
that was the hard part that I should have reread stuff. I'm not even going to lie to you guys.
Yeah, and then we have an interesting reveal here of Azrael, which, you know, if the cover art and promo art for this hadn't already given it away months ago.
Yeah.
He seems to be the big bad, which I have no relationship with this character at all, so I don't know how close it is to the original Azrael, or if he's taking a completely different spin on it.
Well, I know the new one is somebody, isn't it Michael something?
No, Jean-Luc. That was during the R.I.P. That was Michael something.
He's Jean-Luc Lafayette, I believe.
No, it's his name is Jean-Paul Vallier.
Or Jean-Paul. Excuse me.
I was having a hard time with names today.
Something French, I'm sorry.
Something French.
And Jean-Paul Vallée was the original Azrael created by Denny O'Neill and Joe Quesada.
Well, my thing is he was he older?
No.
That's what I was kind
of... He was actually younger than Bruce.
That's what I thought. That's why when I saw an older guy, I was like, where are we going with this?
Apparently, we're going, like, PTSD with Azrael.
Well, the other part of him is he's, his character is dying.
Yep. Yeah, he's an army vet with cancer, and I think they say stage 4 cancer.
I really wish they would say
so.
I mean, he says that he has 6 months to live. It's like without chemo.
He's a hulking mass of a dude too.
He is a big guy. Yeah, he's definitely an army vet. I think he's like a Marines or something like that too.
Jean-Paul Vallée Jr. and he was Michael Washington Lane and. The comic, so it sounds like he's the first one. There we go. Sorry, I was Googling.
Michael Lane is a different character. He was part of an experiment that was done to have three Batmans just in case Batman was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I know, yeah.
So Jean-Paul Vallée was he was experimented on by the Order of Saint Dumas, and he believed himself to be like the perfect replacement for Batman.
And that's the fun. That was the fun part of
And he does replace Batman when Batman's back is broken by Bane.
And, and it looks like in this, because he's going after Bruce Wayne, not Batman.
Yep.
He has no beef with Batman, so we will
see. Well, he has no beef with anybody. It's Joker who's tying him to
He's saying Bruce that Wayne. He's like, what, the true heir of Gotham?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it seems like they're going to go a storyline along the lines of the Waynes killed his ancestors and stole his land, and because of it, there became the powerful, rich family, whereas he's this, you know, poor guy, army vet, like, you know, you don't usually go into the army if you're a billionaire.
I'm more curious about the fact that... Alfred, I also forgot that Alfred is no longer with us, but he gave him a whip, and it was made of bat leather, and I'm like, is that a thing?
Well, and not to mention that was a big question mark in the first series, was what did he have, like, hidden, because I think he looks at it several times, like, before he passes. Also, didn't realize that the Azrael's sword actually has the crucifixion on it.
Yep, makes sense.
Oh, does it?
Yep, it's actually part of the hilt design.
And would we all like to look closer at my cover?
Yeah, right? Seriously.
Oh, yeah, it does. Son of a gun.
So yeah, so there's like it's a this is pretty intense stuff. I think the biggest thing that I positive
looks like Zorro. I'm sorry.
Okay, totally. Well, and that's a tie to the idea of like the mark of Zorro being
holding the sword.
His belt.
Maybe.
In that first page.
That might be the same sword. You are right.
At it.
Oh. Wow.
With the winged hilt design, I think it is the same sword.
It totally is. So Lord Wayne in the 1685 flashback has the sword that Joker then gives Jean-Paul later on.
So
I just have to say real quick, I love the old, like, his utility belt.
Yeah.
Like, it has the big, like, yellow buckle. And,
right.
Like, the whip instead of the grappling hook.
I would say go you, Sean Murphy, for, like, or whoever decided to include his black and white drawings for the next issue in the back. That's freaking amazing.
I just want White Knight in black and white here in the States. Please give me the inked version only.
Anyways, not to interrupt you, but...
you know what my favorite part of this whole thing was? I kind of expected the who Azrael was going to be a big, like... reveal within the story that they were going to have to, you know, like, that was going to be a nice mystery box. And it was typical Sean Murphy to be like, nah, fuck that. I'm just going to tell you in the beginning.
Yeah.
It's Jean-Paul Valley. It's that character that you knew as Azrael the entire time of the character's existence. So here we go.
I enjoy the fact that they paint Joker as an angel.
Oh, that's fucking
that
creepy.
That was such a good, thing.
Well, yeah. I mean, the art in this book, as anything Sean Murphy does, is a tour de force. I mean, it's just, it's incredible what he does with the ink line, with the blacks, the way that he chooses to stage certain events, and...
The way he has, I know we already talked about it, but the way he has Bruce reading Alfred's letter, and it's, like, not in, narration boxes.
Yeah.
It's so cinematic. I totally see that, like, in a movie with the, you know... somebody reading the letter from the person that's died, you know, dear Bruce.
Yeah.
And then, his tattoo on his shoulder has a sword and wing.
Yeah.
There's a lot in this. I really should stop looking at it.
Yeah.
I will say, he fucked that guy up when he smashed him into a door, yeah. a door frame.
And then say that he's hallucinating again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
And which leads me to believe, I wouldn't be surprised if they do something with the Order of Saint-Dumas, like there's some sort of a cult that he fell into at some point.
More curious if those pills that Joker had are going to come back into play.
Oh, to keep him sane?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. Well, yeah, I don't know if anybody looked at the dog tag.
I did not.
Mm-hmm. But it says Jean-Paul Valley, in quotations, Azrael, yeah, and mm-hmm. it says Catholic. So,
yep.
Like, it's an important thing to have his religious... beliefs listed on the dog tag.
Yeah. And who is this woman that like Joker is talking to?
I don't know who that is either.
I thought it was Waller at first.
He said Ruth though, and I was like, who the hell is that?
She's Amanda Waller. So
yeah, and yeah, and she looks like the CEO of some company, because Amanda Waller's MO isn't like the big flashy penthouse offices.
No, not normally.
She never. And, you know, she's like, get off my
right on time, desk. Ruth. Like,
yeah, that's not Amanda Waller's, like, action.
No.
But, yeah, and, like, I don't know, Batman's, like, questioning himself. Like, it is a really interesting thing he said.
Yeah.
Like, if Napier was the good guy and I was against him, does that make me the bad guy?
Right.
I kind of like it when Batman like question, like really digs deep into like his soul. It's always very interestingly introspective.
Right.
So
I liked that idea of the fact that Barbara and Dick do not want him to reveal the identity, that it's okay to keep the secret identity is, but to work alongside the police is more important, and to still be behind the mask. And apparently Jim agrees with him. You know, that's the whole reason he's still Batman and not just, you know, something else.
Yeah, seeing Barbara and Dick, like, at their desks in the GTO office.
Yeah.
Like, it's so, like, cop show.
Right.
Like, or, like, cop drama, but with, like...
superheroes.
Yeah, and like Batman's like his cape in this
has the popped collar,
like old like a noir detective.
Yeah, the,
like
the,
it's so
the Dracula cape is like what I like to call it.
Well, they also have like the one of the shots the Batmobile's parked. They have the '60s and the
The movie Batmobile.
Batmobile.
And then the tumbler in the far spot. So, which Sean Murphy is a big car guy, so. There's always Easter eggs with that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah, look at that.
In there.
That's funny. Oh, man.
Yeah, it actually looks like the DeLorean from Back to the Future is parked in the Batcave, too.
That's funny.
That is really funny. Yeah. So, really, yeah. I enjoyed this a lot. I'm really excited to see where this goes.
Me, too. I think I don't know if... For me, it was more straight ahead. Like, it was just the beginning of a Batman story.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like, and I thought there would be more surprise to it. But it looks like there's a lot of, like, deep cut is what's going on in here. There's a lot of stuff inside of the imagery and the choices for the characters and the details. Like, the devil's in the details in this one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talked just now about the Dracula... collar, and then going back to the beginning, it was the Joker character, you know, that is a vampire.
Yeah, and they even refer to him as a vampire.
Right.
Like, he's from the vampire from Legend.
And then on top of that, like, go back to the first page, Patrick, the look of the Wayne is also very much like Castlevania. He's mm-hmm. got a sword, and he's got the special whip at his side as well. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, like you said, it's very Zorro. So this is a lot of mythology tied directly to the character of Batman.
Yeah.
You know, the Mark of Zorro is the movie that they go to see that
and
when they come back from that the parents die.
Yeah.
So the big thing that I also noticed, too, when I was flipping through this is... Joker made a huge distinction of saying Jack Napier is not me.
Oh yeah, he hates the idea of Napier, mm-hmm. and so.
And which the other part is too is when I opened up the story, he's got two different colored eyes.
Yep,
which the right one is Jack Napier color,
right?
And the left one is Joker color.
The Joker's purple eye.
So I had that in the last one mm-hmm. for most of it.
Yep, I think he had it even when he was Jack.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I think you might be right. So I'm really curious because. It seems like Jack Napier is a serious problem with him, and that's why he's going fucking nuclear.
Also interesting, no Harley in the first issue.
Yeah, that's the other thing. I was like, where's Harley?
Don't take
this away from me.
Neo-Joker.
No, I was thinking Harley. Neo-Joker should be in prison.
Yeah, she's in prison. I was thinking
that's true.
Harleen Quinzel.
Yep. Well, I mean, I'm definitely 100% in on this, and it was a great issue. It's just like... It got overshadowed for me.
I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I'm really interested to see if we get another flashback to a different time and with a different Joker, Batman.
I don't know. I'm of two minds of that because I think I'd rather just like lean into that specific time period and there's a connection there rather than it being too much of like this repetitive action that's always going to be these two entities.
And see, I kind of like that. Like, I was getting, like, that is the curse of the White Knight. Like, that this battle is always raging, will always rage, and it's just, like, a constant in the universe. Yeah.
I think there's something to say that maybe that the vampire is actually where Jean-Paul is actually a descendant of.
Yes, I assumed that, too, actually. So. That's why I accidentally called him Jean-Paul Lafayette in the beginning.
I think they might actually reference that, and they said something about the valley. But anyway.
Yeah, anywho.
We'll move on to the book that, for me, overshadowed Curse of the White Knight, and that is House of X, number one. It was written by, it's Hickman, and I forgot his first name. John Hickman, jeez.
Wow,
John Hickman.
You pick, like, one of the most common names to forget.
John.
John by Pepe Larraz. Yeah, this was science fiction X-Men at its absolute best, and wow, so many questions. I love the little break interludes that give you straight exposition and information, and it's all very important. Also, it seems as if people have actually deciphered the language already, which is really odd, because they make a point to say that it's gibberish.
Like people as in comics readers?
Yeah, comics readers have already actually deciphered it.
Interesting.
Yeah, so how do we, like, this is a complete new jumping on point for the X-Men books. It begins with a birthing of, could be the original five, the way that the line
they
indicates.
They reference Jean as Marvel Girl.
Yep, she's Marvel Girl. It also seems as if we're getting a Cyclops reference in those first two pages as well. Yeah, there's a notice in the first couple of pages. So yeah, so this is a rebirth. This is a complete restart of the X-Men franchise. Everything to this point seems to have existed, and the mutants have established their own nation of Krakoa, and it is the mutant nation, and they created their own language, and they were trying to make peace with the rest of the world to have their own country and own sovereign nation.
I'm pretty sure that's Jean and Scott Summers.
Yeah, so the beginning, I believe, is actually the rebirth of the X-Men, whether or not they were put into pods and are coming back out healed and newly reborn, or if it is literally somehow Xavier is just remaking his X-Men.
Either way, I did not enjoy the pod thing. It freaked me out.
So here's an interesting thing. There's a moment in here where they talk about the benefits of Krakoa to both humans and to mutants. And in the benefits column for the mutants, there's a thing called No Place, which is a delivery mechanism, is what this flower, and it says the non-naturally occurring flower produces a habitat that exists outside of the collective consciousness of Krakoa, a place within the island's ecosystem that Krakoa doesn't know exists, a Krakoan tumor. The only instance of Krakoa being represented in black is in the first two pages where everything is being born.
So everywhere else, saying it's like a cloud for consciousness?
It is a place of the ecosystem that doesn't exist. So I think Xavier is manipulating Krakoa to rebuild mutant kind, and Krakoa is unaware that that is actually happening. Because Krakoa itself is a mutant, and fun fact, Krakoa is the first villain in giant-sized X-Men number one, which is the first time a new team really is established in X-Men from the original five. It's also the first appearance, or the first time Wolverine and Nightcrawler and that whole team first appears.
I think that's the other hard part I have with this, is it seems to play into a lot of X-Men lore, and I literally know nothing about X-Men.
Yeah, so for me, this is my favorite type of storytelling, is the, these are going to be references to the history of the characters, and if you don't know this stuff, don't care. You can go and research it on your own. I'm not here to spoon feed for this for you. If you want to know that stuff, go read it. Because that's not my job. My job is to tell a good story, and that's what I think Hickman did here. I think he told a great sci-fi story. And
I will say the damn emblem for House of X, though, I keep thinking it's a damn sticker, and it bothers me.
You want to pull it off and put on stuff?
I want to peel it off, and I'm like, that's not it. It's just a part of the page. You're fine.
I love this. I love the appearances. I love the way that Magneto is so fucking Magneto in this story. So...
Yeah, I don't.
Answer that question is a dick. Is the guy towards?
I don't know much about the X-Men. Like, as far, pretty much all of my knowledge comes from X-23.
Nice,
like
right?
That title, and anything like you get like more than one mutant together, and I start to zone out. But I thought this was a great read. I enjoyed this immensely, and like, I am for the first time in a while, I'm actually going to see where this X-Men story goes. I think it, not since X-Men Red. I think that's the only other X-Men comic that I picked up multiple issues of.
That was a good book.
And so this one gets my glowing review. I hope there's an interesting way, like, I don't know, Professor X in his new costume is so ominous. And he only says, like, three lines in this whole book. Mm-hmm. And then Magneto in this white costume is also very ominous as well. And so I hope they don't go down the typical, like, the governments start to fight mutants and then the mutants fight back, causing more division kind of storyline.
Well, I think the biggest thing with this is Professor Xavier's face is always, you can always see his face. You can't see his face in this one, and it bothers me, and I think that's the whole point of his weird little head thing.
Well, is that Cerebro that he has, essentially?
That's what I figured
it was. That's what I assumed as well. And that's why he can walk as well, because...
I think he can walk as well because I think he took the pod rejuvenation.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And I think that he was his first experiment to see if he could use Krakoa to be reborn, so to speak. And I also didn't know how wealthy Xavier was, but they make it mention that he was buying shell companies, or through shell companies, he was buying up pharmaceuticals.
Yeah.
And he's destabilized the pharmaceutical industry, which I think is a great, like, subplot to this, is that the moves that he made are benefiting mankind and bad for the businesses of mankind.
Yeah, so they're starting their own country because they want to have their own country, but what does every country need eventually is money.
Yeah.
And so they have the only resource of the most valuable pharmaceutical on the planet. That is a great export to have for a new nation. Not to get into poli-sci too much, but
it's interesting because it's like, because the hypothesis indicate that the mutants literally could populate the world and take over as the dominant species within 20 years, and he and the mutant kind is simply saying, give us our land and you can have the rest of the world. We just want this in our sovereignty.
They're just chilling over there, like, whenever you guys do nuclear war on each other, that's fine. We're here to pick up the pieces.
Yep. There was also the moment with Cyclops where he finally just throws his hands up and he's like, nope, I guess that's it. I guess we're not going to be able to make an agreement here. That's cool.
Yeah, exactly. There's a whole, like, I loved all that. And we were talking about Magneto, too, and they're just like, well, you can't do this because we have all this leverage. And they're just like, no.
Yeah. Like, what leverage do you have? Let me take apart your gun that you carried in here for your own protection.
Yeah, for your own protection. I love that line, too. Of course it's for your own protection. That's how it always starts.
Yep.
There were a lot
of jabs in this at, like, the turns that we're taking as humanity right now.
Yeah. So this is, and I talked in that briefly with this, but this is like going back to X-Men, like X-Men's original meaning, which is to be a stand-in for what have you, racism, bigotry of all kind. And so this is like really going back, like Magneto, right? He's like, we're sick of being treated like scum for our entire lives, so bye. Yeah. Like deuces.
Yeah, that's an interesting too, like a cross parallel to Magneto and Cyclops being very much in the same sort of stoic headspace of, we're not gonna fight with you. That's not really our MO. We're here to deal with our kind.
Yeah, they're like, we're a new nation, like we can't just instantly start it off with war. Yeah. Like that's just not good for a country.
Yeah, it's bad for business.
Yeah, bad for business. And so, and Kat, you were saying something about earlier too about Magneto's like god complex.
I've always hated Magneto for that exact reason, and that's because, and it's mostly just because I literally, my favorite superhero is basically a god, but he's a man, and so I always have an issue with
Godman. Right?
Yeah, Godman with characters with god complexes like Magneto is. And that's why that's the other part of it too, is I'm trying to understand what the hell Xavier is doing, because the whole egg thing weirds me out and it makes me uncomfortable, but if that's how you have the ability to repopulate mutant kind, you can really just, I don't know how long everything takes, but it doesn't seem to take long.
Yeah, and I don't know, like, there's a lot of characters who've been dead in the recent X-Men past. Jean, mm-hmm. Logan, and Scott have all been dead within the last 5 years of
stories. I'm pretty sure you saw Beast, Kitty, who was it?
Yeah. But the fact that we focus, like, those characters are featured front and center.
Oh, yeah, those are the ones who are up. Oh, that's right, Storm. I can never remember his name.
Colossus.
Man-Guy.
Who the hell is this?
I believe it's Iceman, I would assume.
That makes sense. I don't know who that one is either, but I'm pretty sure. I think that's Beast.
Yep.
I'm assuming this is Kitty. This, I don't know. I think that was his.
Oh, that's one of the cuckoos.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's in the location that they were met. And the two Stepford cuckoos, and this is something that I didn't know in this conversation with Keith, friend of the show, that those happened, like the names they choose happen to be two of the Stepford cuckoos that are dead.
Yeah.
So we're dead previous to this story. I believe they featured a little bit in
X-23. Yeah. They're actually like some of the mutants that I'm most familiar with because they're extensively in the first arc of this past X-23 run. So that's
really interesting.
Yeah, the two sisters, one of them like dies and then, or two of them die, yeah, and then they take their names. Because there's a whole big thing with, like, that's my clone name versus, yeah. like, this is the name I choose. Like,
my well, and then there's like, this, and this, it's, this is my human name, so maybe I'll take another.
Mm. Oh, yeah, exactly. So it's, like, that reversal. Yeah.
So, and the other thing is, too, is, like, they have a list of Omega-level mutants that are known.
And their affiliations, which mm-hmm. is, like, that's interesting.
That's, yeah. That's kind of where I'm really curious. That's why when I didn't see a lot of Xavier.
He's not listed in the Omega-level mutants.
He's not, which is odd.
Yes, the Omega-level telepath is Jean.
Because it makes me wonder... That makes me wonder if his powers have mutated more than into something else. Yeah. And he's no longer... He might be a telepath, but he has something that's much stronger than it. Because it said in that they can have more than one ability, but they're...
Only one ability will generally be Omega-level.
Yeah.
So, were y'all... I was getting the impression that all this supplementary material was like one of these government's tabs on Krakoa.
I'm not sure, only because of the stuff that leads to the direct information about Krakoa itself. So that one that has like the benefits for mankind, the benefits for mutantkind, because it seems like no one knows about the black space, like where Xavier's birthing people. It seems like he's even maybe hiding that from the mutants themselves. Mm. Like, no one knows. Because
the other half of that is I think it's theirs. That looks kind of like just like a database of everything and all the information that they have.
And it could just be...
their own, like, portfolio?
Yeah.
I think it might just be out of story.
Fair enough.
Like, I think that might actually... It's just straight exposition for us. It's just like, here's some information. I don't know. There might be more to
both
it.
Both of those are fine, but for some reason, like, I was just getting that feeling that it was, like, yeah. some, like, government organization tabs.
Because I just figure that they probably wouldn't have the Krakoan map. Like, that would not be something. Also, it's interesting that all of the listed places are on the northern half of Krakoa, and there's nothing listed on the southern half.
Oh, interesting. I didn't think about that.
And I'm wondering, too, this is actually physically black. I don't know if that's supposed to represent the dark space that Krakoa doesn't know exists. Yeah. I'm pointing at the lower part of the map for anybody who's actually reading along with us.
Yeah.
There's, like, a white dotted outline that I didn't even notice until now.
Yeah,
so I'm wondering if that's the black spot. So Krakoa itself doesn't always exist, and on maps, it's not even listed.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I was wondering about that myself.
So, and Krakoa is a mutant, for anybody who's unclear on that.
I did not know that before. That's
actually, yeah.
Okay, then that gives it a lot more, like, of a sinister overtone.
Also, House of M is listed as a place alongside House of X. So, the House of X being the house that Xavier built, and the House of M being the house that Magneto built.
Interesting. I mean, so, I get that ostensibly they're on good terms now.
Yeah, I mean, so,
I mean, honestly, they gave me like a small world building comic for just like that stuff. I'd be game. That'd be fine.
I'm really interested in Powers of Ten as to why it is Powers of Ten and not Powers of X, and where does it fit in this timeline? So, because supposedly there's no time travel, that's not really what the story is, but there is at least one connecting character, and that is the Sentinel that is working with the humans and building that, Karima, excuse me, that's her name. She is definitely on the poster for Powers of Ten. And she's the only thing, well, besides Charles, that isn't that. And also, Charles is unhelmeted. He does not have Cerebro in the information that's been delivered thus far for Powers of Ten, so I'm very intrigued.
So are you thinking that Powers of Ten is the build-up?
I think Powers of Ten may have be, yes, like Powers of Ten, the results of that lead into where Xavier is now. And why he's making the decisions, because Moira says something to him in the very beginning of Powers of Ten that apparently is, like, going to shake the foundations of X-Men comics, and that's what's been said. This was great, though. I was like, and this is a super deep book, and it's very... I love how science fiction-y it is. It reads to me like a science fiction image book. You know, like something that would have all of these outside elements and things that just sort of pop in and out of the story, so...
Yeah, and I... Yeah.
Oh, and the art's great. I don't. We haven't talked about Pepe Larraz, but like everybody feels distinct and clear. You know who characters are.
I will say the one thing that I enjoy that they brought back is just the constant shadow of Magneto's eyes.
Oh yeah,
and
just
the
like
dark tones on his face, and because
There's also a really cool sequence that I, it's when Jean comes home and Jean and Xavier are having a quick little conversation. The first time I read it as always being Xavier talking, but the word bubble comes from Xavier first and he's in panel, and then the second word bubble is Jean in panel, almost as if Jean is saying it back to him.
That's how I read it.
Oh, I definitely read it as him saying both of them.
But I think there's an interesting ambiguity there. Like, that could be her saying, "You're safe here, we all are," to him.
Yeah.
Which, that is an interesting, like, is that a call response? Like, oh, welcome home, and then the response is, "You're safe here, we're all safe here." Like,
I read it all culty. I'm not even gonna lie to you.
That's exactly how I read it. I don't like how serene everything is.
Yeah.
It's too nice. Seeing Wolverine play with children is terrifying.
Right. And that's like, but he's always had great relationships with kids. Like, he's always been a leader of the children.
But he's too goddamn happy. And then, like literally in this panel with Charles Xavier, like, the background is like pink and rosy. Yeah. Like, you know, looking at the world through rose colored glasses.
And that's kind of my thing where I'm like, this screams culty to me.
It is a big question, like, this.
Oh, yeah.
I also have the question of whether or not Krakoa is the villain in this story. That if, like, Krakoa is...
The minute you said, like, that Krakoa is a mutant, then I can only see this going that way. That, like, it is, even though it is using the flowers, there's something in it that lets it essentially mind control all the mutants into, like, a hive mind.
The crazy part is, it's
mind.
Just, like, this, the eye thing freaks me out.
I did not know what that was until flipping back after you said that. So, like, it's making a lot of sense now. Especially if Charles Xavier is the first person to eat the flower, then Krakoa has his abilities to, like,
oh, that's true. And Krakoa, in the past, like, it feeds on mutants. Like, it feeds on their energies. So
interesting. So, yeah, that gives it... I knew this book was sinister, like, just going through, but, yeah, not talking about it. It's even worse.
Yeah. So this is interesting. Yeah, this is really good. I'm like, this was a great jumping on point for the X-Men universe, so we'll see if it... see if it can keep up. I'm really, really intrigued by Powers of Ten. I want to know why it's called Powers of Ten and not Powers of X.
In the back of my mind, I'm just sitting over here and I'm like, are we going to play Big Brother right now? Is this going to turn Big Brother-y? Yeah. Are we going to tickle that for me? Because I don't want to play that.
The group is pretty Big Brother-y in another
time. Oh, no, I was talking about Krakoa. People with all the eyes. Mm-hmm. Just the first
and
brother
then
eye.
And flowers everywhere, mm-hmm. you know, being planted all around the world. Like, mm-hmm. is he using the mutants to take over the whole world?
Yeah.
We'll find out.
Yeah, right.
All right, so, well, that's
anyway,
it.
I guess we'll say bye then, huh? Yeah. Well, bye.
Bye.